Stu Does America.
Follow the show on YouTube at youtube.com/Stu Does America and wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to have your the audio situation going on there as well. Sarah Gonzalez is here to help break down the staggering amount of corruption in Minnesota. I've got some Chartapalooza to do on Donald Trump's recent moves in the housing market. We're going to start by doing the Minneapolis ICE shooting. What a freaking day. What we know about the fatal ICE shooting in Minneapolis from CBS News, Trisha McLaughlin, Department of Homeland Security spokesperson, said in a statement that the shooting occurred while ICE officers were conducting targeted operations. McLaughlin described the woman who was killed as one of several violent rioters who were blocking ICE officers. According to her, the woman weaponized her vehicle, attempting to run over our law enforcement officers in an attempt to kill them. Now, you've probably seen the video of this already. In fact, there's multiple videos from a bunch of different angles. I want to show you what I think is the most definitive view of this. And I want to show it to you here in a couple minutes, because this is about the entire incident and how it started and what was actually going on. It's really, really important. So stick with me for a second. Let me get you first. Give me the reaction of the president of the United States. He says, "I have just viewed the clip of the event, which took place in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Horrible thing to watch. The woman screaming was obviously a professional agitator, and the woman driving the car was very disorderly, obstructing and resisting, who then violently, willfully, and viciously ran over the ICE officer, who seems to have shot her in self-defense. Based on the attached clip, it's hard to believe he is alive, but it is now recovering in the hospital. Situation is being studied in its entirety, but the reason these incidents are happening is because of the radical left is threatening, assaulting, and targeting our law enforcement officers and ICE agents on a daily basis. They are just trying to do the job of making America safe. We need to stand by and protect our law enforcement officers from this radical left movement of violence and hate." So that's from the president of the United States. Tom Homan, of course, head of the border security. He talked to CBS Evening News about this and didn't want to go as far as the president here. Watch.
"I think the city of Minneapolis is on edge. I think the country is on edge right now. You say the investigation is ongoing.
Investigation just started.
Just started. You say you can't comment on the video, which many Americans are seeing and reacting to.
I'm not going to make a judgment call on one video when there's 100 videos out there. I wasn't on the scene. I'm not an officer that may have body cam video. It'd be unprofessional to comment on what I think happened in that situation. Let the investigation play out. And hold people accountable based on the investigation."
"I think many members of the public are calling for the same thing, and so they're confused. Maybe you can help me understand how the Department of Homeland Security could conclude so swiftly that this is a, quote, act of domestic terrorism, that this woman, quote, weaponized her vehicle. By the very same standard you describe, this investigation is just getting started."
That's a question for Homeland Security. I'm the border czar. Well, I can tell you what I've seen on my airplane ride here, looking at numerous videos, seeing numerous social media posts, statements from Homeland Security, statements from Secretary Noem. I'll leave it at that. What good is it to do right now to me prejudge the facts of what happened today without giving law enforcement professionals, whether it's the FBI or the local police there, give them time to look at all the videos, talk to all the witnesses, talk to the officers, and make an educated decision on what occurred today? That's what needs to happen. I've been a cop since 1984. That is a process we must go through."
I think quite clearly that's the right approach, right? Like, that is how you should always approach these moments and sit here and you know, we can all look at the video. We can make our own judgments. We can speculate and you know, we'll engage that, I suppose, a little bit, but that's the proper approach of certainly law enforcement, right? They don't make these decisions immediately. They don't judge them immediately. Politicians are going to do different things. I mean, like, you know, let me give you this. This is Jacob Frey. He's the terrible mayor of Minneapolis. He's in the middle of destroying the city. And he does that on a regular basis, but he's in high gear right now because he gets to be in front of cameras, which he adores. And the only person that he might be the only person outside of Tim Walz and Letitia James that annoys me the way he speaks, the pacing of his speech. And he's just a really irritating douche, to be frank about it. But here is Jacob Frey.
"But I do have a message for our community, for our city,
and I have a message for ICE.
Set it up.
To ICE, get the out of Minneapolis.
Oh, that was powerful.
We do not want you here.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
Your stated reason for being in this city is to create some kind of safety, and you are doing exactly the opposite.
If anyone knows sign language, did the sign language person do the F-bomb? I kind of want to know. Now, that's my main question about that particular clip. But the stilted, just, I prepared this in front of a mirror 2 hours ago, nonsense. Look, if you are to, I am of the opinion, I'd rather just not have my politicians swearing. You know what? I understand that a lot of people do it in real life. I understand that everyone's said a swear at some point. It does not make me feel that you're any tougher because you drop an F-bomb, especially when you set it up with 9 minutes of precursor, when we all know you were what you're leading to. There was no passion in that. There was no thought. It was all just pre-planned. It wasn't off the top of his head. Oh, just so cringe. This guy is so cringe. Here he is swearing again because you know he's tough.
We've dreaded this moment since the early stages of this ICE presence in Minneapolis. Not only is this a concern that we've had internally, we've been talking about it. They are not here to cause safety in this city.
To cause safety?
What they are doing is not to provide safety in America.
No.
What they are doing is causing chaos and distrust. They are already trying to spin this as an action of self-defense.
Obviously.
Having seen the video of myself, I want to tell everybody directly, that is This was an agent recklessly using power that resulted in somebody dying.
Was that true? Again, we're going to show you a video here in a little bit that I think will shine some light on that particular question. Christy Noem heard Jacob Fry being a douche and decided to respond to him for whatever reason, even though he obviously didn't deserve a response. But here's what she said.
Secretary Noem, Mayor Fry called the claims of self-defense BS. How do you respond to that?
I say that he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's very clear that this individual was harassing and impeding law enforcement operations. Our officer followed his training, did exactly what he's been taught to do in that situation, and took actions to defend himself.
Hmm. Well, this is a guy who was already the victim of being hit and dragged by a car. Dragged by a car is probably the right verbiage there. Very recently, within the last 60 days, I believe. So something might have been on the top of his mind, was trying maybe not to get killed. But it's never enough for a law enforcement officer. No, we just got to make sure that we just call them murderers every single time. Here's Tim Walz. And I told you he was going to be gone out of our lives. And then here he is again. Seemingly the only thing, only place that anything happens in our country is Minnesota these days. Here is Tim Walz talking about what he's going to do to respond to all of this.
We have soldiers in training and prepared to be deployed if necessary. I remind you, a warning order is a heads up for folks. And these National Guard troops are our National Guard troops. They're teachers in your community. They're business owners. They're construction professionals. They are Minnesotans.
Oh, that's powerful.
Minnesota will not allow our community to be used as a prop in a national political fight.
Too late for that, buddy.
We will not take the bait. We will continue to update you, Minnesota, as we get more information.
Your own party has been turning Minnesota into a nonstop heap of political debate and nonsense for years and years and years and years, going back to George Floyd. This is kind of what the state is now, apparently. This is the only thing. You know, it's so sad for a state like Minnesota. This is the state where the Philadelphia Eagles won their first Super Bowl. And it's been turned into this crap heap. Just so sad. Anyway, the community standards thing under the tweet. As Governor, Tim Walz can deploy his National Guard for a variety of missions. But the U.S. Constitution Supremacy Clause prohibits use of force by a state for purposes of thwarting or defeating federal law, which is properly defined as a rebellion. And the it's interesting because you don't know exactly why they're threatening to bring out the National Guard. Part of it might be they expect their own people to riot. That would actually be an okay use of the National Guard to try to quell a riot like that. But it seems like he's saying we're going to do this to stop ICE agents. And that would obviously be blatantly illegal. and not to mention horrible. I can't even imagine that the National Guard would participate in that sort of thing. More Democrats speaking out about this, calling for the ICE agent in Minneapolis to be prosecuted. AOC says called the incident in question a murder, which is, by the way, a murder, a two-syllable word, her maximum amount of syllables. Just a little known fact for you. Ro Khanna said the ICE agent should be arrested. Ilhan Omar, of course, from Minneapolis, she said it was unconscionable and reprehensible. So she's got up to four syllables. Unconscionable. Oh, gosh, we're going even farther than that. And then legal action as well. She wanted against that. No word if she understood and was able to glean these big words at the Quality Leaning Center. We don't know. She may have started there and look at where she came to. She went from there to Maroon 5 videos all the way to today. So that's kind of exciting. There were protests, of course. Anti-ICE protesters clashed with cops during Minneapolis demonstrations. We knew this was going to happen. It depends on how much this gets. And I don't know. Do people look at this and say, gosh, this is an injustice? They immediately look at that? Or are Democrats just trying to turn it into that? We're going to watch the video here in a second. Minneapolis canceling school for the week after the deadly ICE shooting. You can't have kids. I mean, you got to keep the kids at home so the parents can go out and protest, right? So I guess that's the reason there. Although they did close schools for pretty much every time they get sick, too. So I don't know. Let me give you a little bit of a little more perspective from the mainstream media, by the way. I want to make sure that we're giving credit here because the mainstream media usually gets these things wrong. There has been a lot of things that have been completely wrong in the coverage of this particular incident. But NBC News, of all places, actually had a relatively fair breakdown of what you're seeing. Let's watch.
Stuff we were learning from the get-go. Again, the police chief saying this vehicle was blocking the federal agents right there.
That's right, Tom. And a big caveat, we don't know what happened before this, but they're definitely going to look at the fact this is an unmarked vehicle, but the lights are on. These are clearly members of law enforcement. So that's at least known to this driver.
Let's play the video because something else happens right here. Those officers approach the vehicle. They try to open the door. Let's stop it here. How will this help the investigators?
Whatever is said here, what these officers say, if the driver said anything or not, could really help them understand whether or not they thought there was some sort of an imminent threat. Was this person trying to listen to them? Were they scared? Or is this going to be a problem?
And then, of course, what the driver does next. Let's play that video. Trying to leave there. One of the officers felt like they were forced to fire, and they do. We want to show another angle, a reverse angle of the same incident here. We're going to freeze it. This is that same angle here. And what does this show us, Tom?
Well, this appears to show an officer right in front of the vehicle. That and between the way that the vehicle was moving and the timeline of that, how was the officer responding in that split second going to be critical for investigators.
Finally, one more piece of evidence we want to talk about here, and it is the bullet hole in the front of the windshield. What will this tell investigators?
Well, you look at this, you look at ballistics, you look at witness statements, you look at other video, all going to be part of this investigation. But Tom, it's going to take some time.
So that's kind of a good breakdown of everything that you saw. And one of the interesting parts of that, if of course they come up and try to get her to get out of the car, she decides instead she's going to try to gun it and go the other direction. So let's show you the video. This is I want you to watch this, and then I want to show you a couple of details on it that I think are really, really important. If you're on audio podcast, of course, I will attempt to walk you through this. Here is the full video of the incident. It's about 20 seconds. And you see the truck come up. She is parked in the middle of the road, blocking their way. You see the police officers
no!
walk up there.
No!
There's an officer in front of them, and that's when the gun goes off.
Oh, my God!
Now, interestingly, she continues to keep going and crash into a car down the street. The definitive part of this, because I think what you see there is a situation where she... the driver, who is the person who is shot in this incident, appears to be driving away. When you watch the video, I think quite clearly it looks like she's trying to escape the situation. And, you know, if you're an officer and, you know, you are not fearing for your life, you can't just shoot the person as they're trying to escape, right? Like, I mean, you know, perhaps there's some incidents where that is a possibility, right? Like if, you know, someone were to, you know, like the person in Butler, Pennsylvania, if they were to shoot the president and then try to run away, yes, you could take them out. But like when a person's in the car and is not a direct threat to you, you can't just shoot them. The question is, was this a direct threat? Was her intent to run over the police officer, to jump, to jolt the car forward and hit the police officer to an extent that they would be fearing for their lives. I want to show you this video, and I want you to look very closely at this. I'll show it to you first, and then I'll show it to you a couple more times. Here's what we're seeing here. The car backing up. Car now, the officer is in front of the car. You can kind of see his outline right there. And then she moves, and she could see the wheel turning to the right, away from the officer, as he is fires the gun and is sort of looking like, you can see from the other view more clearly, he is actually hit. You watch that video and you say, okay, it looks like, you know, the police officer is in the wrong, right? She's pulling away. What I want you to do this time is only look at the front left tire. I want you to look at the front left tire. You see it back up. It is turned to the left, and then it goes. It's not until after she peels out that she turns the actual wheel to the right. Now, this is Minnesota, so it's miserable. It is cold outside. And what you see there is her wheel slips. If this was not the situation, if they were not on ice, there's no doubt this officer would have been struck by this car pretty much at full force. I want to show it to you one more time. Watch that wheel. It's backing up. She's backing up, and she guns it before she turns the wheel. It is pointed to the left, right at the officer. He does not pull his gun until she guns it. He has his hand on the gun, does not pull the gun until she guns it forward. She starts coming, and as she slips, she turns the wheel to the right and then goes past him. This doesn't clear up every single thing about the incident, but what it does do is show quite clearly a bunch of different things. It's clear she gunned it right at the officer and was turned toward the officer when she gunned it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean she was trying to hit the officer. Could be that she was, you know, she's backing up this way and then she kind of just turns her wheel the other way as she's going forward and mistimed them, freaked out, did 100 things wrong. She's in a very tenuous situation there. But that is not what's important legally. What's important legally is, did he think he was about to get hit by this car? Well, picture standing 4 feet in front of a car. The wheels are turned toward you, and all of a sudden they start spinning like she's peeling out. Like, you're going to think that that's coming toward you. It's quite clear from the other view of this incident that she actually did make contact. Even with the slippage, she still hit the officer, though, you know, not in a devastating way. But that's, again, only because of the ice. If the ice was not there, this would have been a much more devastating situation physically for the actual officer. When I look at this, and again, there's still more details, and I think we have to lean on the Tom Homan perspective here. There's no reason to come up with a final call on this right now. But what we know at the moment, that first shot seems to be pretty justified. That is, to me, quite clear. Now, there are, you know, you can have a situation, and I think this is true in this situation, where that first shot is legally and morally justified. That doesn't mean it's great. Right? Like, we kind of wish this didn't happen. And we wish this went another direction. We wish a mother of three did not lose her life for this, which we should point out was a worthless thing to do in the first place. Parking a car in the middle of the road to stop federal officers is not going to do anything to reverse the immigration situation you seem to be passionate about. It accomplishes nothing. It's an illegal act, and it accomplishes nothing. And now we have a mother who will never see her children again, and her children who will grow up without, I was going to say a mom, but I believe she's in a relationship with two moms. So she has one mom left, but not two anymore. The whole situation is a little bit complicated, I'll be honest with you. I don't see it in the video, I will be honest with you, but every report says that there was a second and third shot from the officer, and those shots happen as she's sort of driving by. It's going to be much more difficult for him to defend himself on those shots. The best case scenario for the officer is that those shots missed. It's possible that that first shot killed the woman, and then after that, he fired a couple more, and they missed, and they didn't do anything. Those second and third shots, I think, will be a problem for the officer, as, you know, she had kind of gotten past him a little bit. It's going to be really tough. We're going to have to look at that stuff. But that's just where we are right now. Again, let's sit back. Let's watch the investigation, and we can see what happens. Look, nothing great here. There's no wonderful solution. There's no wonderful outcome. We can't be like, oh, gosh, you know, everything was heroic and perfect. What we can say is something pretty obvious. Like, no one wants this to happen. I'm really sad that a person died. I didn't want her to die. I'm really sad about it. But one little piece of advice that you can take into your own personal lives as you go out into the world, don't drive your car cops. Like, that's the end of it, right? What would you think would happen to you if you went out into a parking lot as a police officer, they're standing there, and you just drove your car at them? What the hell do you think would happen? Every single person in the world, I think, would expect a police officer to fire on them. That's what I would expect. I would expect that to happen in Texas because everyone's got guns. Pretty much with anybody I just drove my car at. When you drive your car at someone, these types of things occur. Don't drive your car at people, particularly ones that you know for sure are armed because they have their hand on their gun right in front of you. Don't do that. 99% of these things go away if you don't do stuff like that. You can deal with what you think is justice later on. Get yourself through your day. Get yourself back to your kids. Keep this in perspective. The problem here is these protesters think all of these officers from ICE are inhuman monsters. And everything they can do to hurt them is justified. And that's because the media has told them this over and over and over again. And their leadership has told them this over and over and over again. The mayor, Tim Walz, Jimmy Kimmel yesterday, all these people are coming out and doing the same thing again today and encouraging more of this behavior in the future. Now, none of those people cared at all when ICE agents were shot. None of them cared. None of them cared at all about that. They only care now because people on their side have been dealing with problems over this. And look, if you were a person that was an officer that was dragged behind a car for 300 feet 60 days ago, and now someone's gunning their car at you, you know what? I'm pretty sure you'd probably react the same way, at least at the very beginning of that incident. The left's rhetoric is so intense that it has brainwashed millions of people, but also a mother of three, into taking her afternoon and getting herself killed over nothing. I hope you're proud of yourself. I hope you go home at night and say, gosh, we did a good thing encouraging those people to go out and block federal agents. I hope you can live with yourself thinking that that was a good idea. All right, Raycon, this message is sponsored by the fine folks at Raycon. I love Raycon's Everyday Earbuds Classic. I've been using them constantly for music and podcasts and audiobooks and calls, really all of it. Sound is super clear. They are comfortable enough to wear all day. They actually block out the distractions. They've got this great active noise cancellation, but they also have awareness mode, which is key. You kind of need to know what's going on around you a little bit. If you're out running errands, you want to hear what's going on around you. That's a great mode to go into. They also have these outside the ear headphones as well, which are great, especially if you're like running or walking or doing exercise. One of my favorite upgrades is the multi-point connectivity, because I don't know about you. If you're sitting there and you're on your phone, you're listening to something and you go on your laptop and you got to switch it out and you got to go to the Bluetooth settings. You don't have to do that with these. They just connect to both of them at the same time. So whatever you're playing, you actually get to hear without fiddling with the settings. And the fit actually stays put, whether you're moving around or maybe sitting for a long stretch. Battery life is solid, 32 hours with the case. And if you're in a hurry, a quick 10-minute charge gives you about 90 minutes of playtime. Plus, they got new colors. They've got a 30-day happiness guarantee. You're going to love these things. They're everyday earbuds from our friends at Raycon. You can crush your New Year goals in the gym or your New Year goals sitting around on your couch. Raycon Audio Products having a site-wide sale going on this month. Go to buyraycon.com/do, buyraycon.com/stew. It's buyraycon.com/stew. Joined once again by Sarah Gonzalez, Vice President of the Texas Family Project and host of Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered right here on Blaze TV. Sarah, you know, you've lived a very exciting life, done many, many interesting things in that life. Mm-hmm. You ever drive your car at a police officer, though?
Hold on, let me think. No.
No. Mm-mm, you were somehow able to avoid that your entire life?
My whole life, I can say great certainty. I have never. Honestly, Stu, I'll take it one step further. I never thought about driving my car into a police officer.
What about just a regular person? You're just like, I'm going to run my, that person's walking in front of me, I'm just going to gun it right now. You ever do that?
No.
Wow, that's weird. See, I think, I'm starting to think, watching the media coverage, that's the minority position.
It must be. I don't know. It's just so incredible to me that the same people who celebrated the death of Charlie Kirk for simply speaking freely, the same people who were like Ashley Babbitt had it coming because she jumped through a window, still not a good thing to do, but they're like, she deserved to be shot for that.
They were able to see that very clearly.
They were able to see it very clearly, and now all of a sudden, they cannot comprehend why an ICE officer would, not want to be run over. Defend his life from being run over. They can't, their tiny little pea brains can't comprehend that an ICE officer would not want to be run over by an SUV. It boggles the mind that they cannot see that.
It's weird. It's like, because I maybe they just can't see it through their anger. You know, part of me also wonders if they can see it, but they just think the right thing to say today is that they can't see it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I don't know which one it is, but they're both very disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably right. They will use death to fit their political ideology and agenda if they can use death to fit their political ideology and agenda. I think that that's what it comes down to. That's what they've always been. That's what they always will be. They don't have principles. They don't have morals. They don't have values. It's just whatever is politically advantageous for them.
Yeah, and we have, of course, some of the worst politicians in America there taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Jacob Frey, this mayor, he is
so bad.
He's really tough to take.
Oh,
I don't know what it is.
Have you seen him like line dancing with the Somalians?
Yes.
Oh, it's so bad.
Yep, and eating the food really uncomfortably.
This is
delicious. He's really just awful at this. I don't know. I mean, is he an up and comer in the Democratic Party? They think he's going to be a success. Someday?
Really?
I don't know. I keep hearing that.
I hope they think that.
I do too.
I think they're going to be horribly mistaken if that's the case.
It's like just like they think Jasmine Crockett is the next hero.
Right.
I want them to think that.
Exactly. Yes. Tim Walz, jazz hand Tim Walz was going to be the VP. I mean, I think you guys keep picking these same Yahoos. It's not going to work out well.
So good. Let's talk about Tim Walz for a second.
Okay.
Timmy's gone. He's getting out of the race.
Of course,
some reason still in our face every day. Yeah. Apparently, there is no area in the world more corrupt than the state of Minnesota.
Isn't that wild?
I didn't realize this even a couple months ago, I don't think.
I didn't either. Well, you know what I found fascinating was I was reading the other day that now the Democrats are worried about the vetting that took place with the Kamala campaign, that they said, actually, this scandal was in the news several years ago, it was before he got reelected, that they were talking about this state of fraud in Minnesota. And so now the Democrats are like, either they were horribly arrogant and Kamala's team had enough hubris to think it wasn't going to harm them, which to be fair, it didn't harm them. It was just all of the other things that harmed them. Or they just didn't do proper vetting because apparently this dates back to years and years ago. And I thought, I didn't know that at all, that this fraud has been happening for forever. And people have known about it for forever, and just nothing's been done about it. Seemingly, it's just gotten worse.
I mean, I definitely didn't know the scale of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I do feel like I remember reading some bits and pieces of the story, but I believe there's actually a very Sarah Gonzalez lesson to be learned here, if I may, which is, you know, you read stories, even the Chris Rufo story, who, you know, Chris is on the network, has a new show, but like even that story, which was really impactful, it wasn't until we saw it. It wasn't until we saw Nick Shirley walking up to these places and talking to the people and seeing how weird they were acting and seeing the boarded up, you know, or like a blacked out windows. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until it was illustrated. And it reminds me of the stuff that you do all the time. Like, I can sit here and, you know, say, I think it's bad for kids to be, you know, have naked men dressed as women dancing in front of them. I think that's bad. Yeah. And that's true. You go there and you're like, here it is. It's slapping you in the face.
Yeah,
do something about it. It does make a difference.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. People don't want to think about it. People have busy lives. They don't. They're like, yeah, whatever. That's just noise. But when you put it directly in front of their eyes, they go, oh, it's that bad. Okay, now we need to do something about it, which is why we're seeing, you know, now I don't know that anything's going to come from Capitol Hill testimony, but they are at least taking steps, it seems, Tim Walz specifically and Keith Ellison.
Yeah.
It seems like they're taking this seriously and taking steps to actually hold these people accountable.
It's not, if nothing else, it's what Nick Shirley tweeted, I ended Tim Walz.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's huge.
Yeah,
this guy was almost vice president of the United States.
I know.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of, and we give you a bunch of sports examples, but maybe P. Diddy is the best example.
Yeah.
Where, like, that had been bubbling up for a long time. I had intellectually read about these stories, and I understood them. But it wasn't until you saw him in this, like, you know, bay of elevators beating the crap out of a woman, you were like, this has to stop immediately.
Right.
And it's like, there is something that, like, in all of us, it's a very human trait to see something, to experience it, and feel like now something has to be done.
You can't unsee it. There are some things that you can't unsee. And, I mean, God bless Nick Shirley, because the Somalis, they are brutal. They're very violent. They do come from the third world. So I think they take those third world traits and they bring them here. And
well, I saw the Tom Hanks movie, and I believe it was Somali.
He's the captain now.
The captain now. Okay. And they were very tough in that.
They were not nice.
I don't know.
They're not happy with
Nick. We can just do what the left was and just completely put them in a group and judge them all exactly the same way based on some of their
actions. I have literally been doing that for 6 months. So, yes, I will continue to do that. No, these people are mean. They're nasty. Nick has had to hire security now. There have been threats on his life. And again, all because, you know, Tim Walz's daughter did a podcast.
Yeah.
And she did two things. Number one, she admitted that there was enough fraud there to take seriously. And then in the same breath, she also said that Nick Shirley had a responsibility to not expose this. He was not supposed to expose fraud because he was damaging the community or people or something. And it's like, wait, what? So Somalians, because they're brown people, get to come to this country and have all of this fraud happening, steal from taxpayers, and Nick Shirley is supposed to not expose it? And that's how these people are justifying it.
It's really unbelievable, and that's not helpful to the Somali community.
Right.
Right? For the people, I'm sure there are plenty that are fine, right?
There might be like one or two.
One or two. Yeah. Whatever the number is.
Maybe.
That certainly weren't starting up their own fake autism centers, right? Like, not everyone was involved in that scandal.
The other ones are cooking at restaurants serving really crappy food.
And that might be true. It's like, at the very least, those people should be the ones who are speaking up about this the most.
Yeah.
Being like, no, we don't want to be known as a group of people who are doing this. We're happy that we're in America.
Right.
We're blessed with the opportunity to get out of a war-torn hellhole of a country without a government and come here to a place that has order, that will actually have programs that might give us money if we need it. And instead, they came here and abused that system. Yeah. It's like an internet scam. Like, you're getting emails from a Nigerian prince.
It's they all got to go back. They all need to go back. That's my current immigration policy.
Everybody that immigrated
here? Denaturalize and deport.
All immigrants?
All Somalians,
All Somalians. In this area? What if there's a Somalian in, like, you know, Idaho? Are they okay? They're okay. They're gone too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're gone too. Because here, let me tell you,
give me a little bit more on this. I'm sure you've thought this through.
I have, because it's not worth the risk. Mm. There's too much here that I cannot unsee, that if you have all of these, like, Somali crime rings where they're committing fraud, they're sending the money back to terror groups in some cases, it's not worth it. We are not here to just be, you know, the world's testing tube, to just bring anyone here who cares to come here and just see how it works out for us. This is America. It should be the most difficult place to get into because it is the greatest country in the world. Mm-hmm. And that means that we don't need to take risks that are unnecessary. What are these people bringing back to us? In most cases, they have, I'm sorry, Sue, listen, the data shows they have very low IQs, okay? Mm. They're very low skilled. They are taking more in government assistance than they are contributing back to the community. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what isn't it for us at this point?
I mean, it should be at the top of our funnel of immigration policy to say,
yes,
what can this person do for our country?
What are you doing for us?
And I think you agree with this. There are people from around the world that have done great things.
Of course.
In this country.
Of course.
Those are the people we should be looking to try to bring in.
Yes.
As opposed to looking to, you know, groups of people. And you know, look, It's tough, I think, at times to figure out who those people are. I don't expect us to be perfect.
Sure.
But we should be a little bit more careful than we've been over the past 50 years.
Yes. Well, yes. And also, we should take seriously the oath that they sign when they are naturalized citizens.
Yeah.
They sign an oath that says that they will denounce all former allegiances, ties, whatever, to any other regions, governments, whatever. They will support and defend the Constitution and the United States law and order. I mean, they sign their name that they pledge to do all sorts of things that these people are not following through with. Mm. Where's the consequence to that?
Yeah, I was recently on vacation. I was in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Good
for you.
It's all right. It's the Bahamas. There's some great places there. So I'm at the Bahamas and we're sitting at like a bar and, you know, there's one of these guys there that's on vacation, and he's just a talker. This guy is laying everything out there. With 5 minutes of talking to this guy, you know his business, you know how much money he makes a year, you know how much. Like it was, I was like, I've never had a conversation.
He's an oversharer.
Like this absolute okay. Oversharer. So he tells me a story about, and he describes himself very, very successful in business. That was the main pitch.
Sure.
Started telling me about his trip. And his trip was, he was there with his girlfriend, which, you know, was after multiple ex-wives I heard all about. it was a
wow.
Wild journey, Sarah. But the point was, he said he arrives to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And he says he is, like, owns his own business. And it's like, I'm here. And they're like, well, I'm like, so when are you flying back? He's like, I don't know. I might go from here to Cabo. I'm not sure. I'm here. My girlfriend wants to bounce around to all these different hotels, try them all out. I'm like, okay. You know, I mean, he's just
sure.
big talker. But he said, I get into the Bahamas. And I said to the customs person, they said, well, when is your flight leaving? And he said, I don't know. I don't have a flight out of here. What was their question? Their question was, show me your bank account. He had to bring up his online bank account and show it to them. And when he showed it to them, they said, sir, you can stay as long as you want. That is, first of all, a funny story.
Funny.
But secondarily, an interesting
it's
thing.
Smart.
They said, the Bahamas, yeah. This is a place where everyone probably has some money going there.
Right.
If you don't have the resources, we need to know you're leaving.
Yep.
And if you're going to come here with an open window, that's fine if you have the resources to pay for all your crap.
Exactly.
We don't think of ourselves that way. We think of everything as like, God, come on in, do whatever right. damage you need to do. And
right.
that's not the wrong approach, I think.
Yeah.
Last word here.
Listen, it sounds mean, but it's really true. Import the third world, become the third world. We just can't operate that way. We are America, darn it.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That's
America, darn it.
Patriotism right there. I love it. Sarah Gonzalez, Vice President of the Texas Family Project. Sure to catch her right here on Blaze TV. Of course, it's Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right, let me give you, so much is happening. Let me give you a couple of things I'm excited about, and then one I'm not as excited about that's going on with the Trump administration right now. Trump announces that he will leave, along with the U.S., dozens of international organizations, 66 organizations internationally were leaving. Good. None of them do anything positive. I mean, at least the vast majority of them don't. And I'm glad to just be doing our stuff as a country rather than trying to be this, you know, multilateral NGO, whatever this thing is. Let's just get out of that stuff. Another one, defense stocks surge after Trump calls for $1.5 trillion military budget in 2027. It's about $850 billion now. Trump said it shouldn't be a trillion. It should be $1.5 trillion. Look, I'm not necessarily for spending a lot of money, as you may know, and watching the show over the years. But I will say, if you're going to spend it, you should spend it on defense. That's one of the actual real things the federal government's supposed to be doing. There's only a few things they're supposed to be doing. That is actually one of them. And making sure that we're ahead of other countries when it comes to national defense is the most important responsibility of the U.S. government. I mean, above and beyond almost anything. I mean, and then protecting rights is certainly important. Constitutional principles are very important. But really, if you don't have any of those things if people are invading you all the time. So, while you have to watch waste, you have to make sure you're not wasting all this money. I'm fine, especially if you're developing new weapons to take on a new world. So I think that's important. Now, look, the next one I'm going to say to you is definitely the most popular out of these three. Everybody I talk to loves this proposal. I will just, you know, what do I do here other than to annoy you when you're happy? Right. That's all I do. Trump says the U.S. is going to ban large investors from buying homes. I'm not in favor of this. I believe in a free market. You should be able to buy homes if you're a company. If you want to be a large investor, you want to invest in homes, you should be able to do that. I also don't think that's actually the complaint that people have. The complaint that people have is houses are too freaking expensive, right? Like, I can't get into these houses. I want to buy a new house and I can't do it. That's what I think people are reacting to. And I think they're seeing this as a way to stop it. And I think that's kind of how Trump is selling it. You know, I'm sure his heart is in the right place. And I think most people thinking about this are approaching this in a really understandable way, saying like, hey, look, I want to buy a house. I'm maybe a first-time home buyer. I can't get into this house because there's no supply out there. The only thing I would bring up here is that I don't think it's because of large investors buying homes. Let me give you an idea of what the reality is. Of all the homes sold in the United States every year, here's the chart of what it looks like. About 1% of homes are being purchased by institutional investors. It did rise as high as 3% in 2022, but usually is lower than that and is sitting right now at 1.2%. That is our latest number. Now that's just the houses sold in a particular quarter. When you look at overall ownership, depends on how you look at it. It's between 1 and 4% of homes overall are owned by large institutional investors. That's not to say it's nothing. It might have some factor. What you're going to do if you're one of these investors, you're going to buy a bunch of homes and you're going to be renting these houses out. Now, you might say, well, I want to buy. I don't want to rent. And, you know, that's true. But is it the government's responsibility to come in and manipulate that process? I would argue no. I would also argue, though, that really like a company like Blackstone, which is the one getting a lot of the blame for this, owns 0.06% of houses in this country. 0.06%. They are actually, the only reason they have any houses really at all is because they purchased two other companies that were buying houses. So they never even really bought the houses themselves. They just bought the companies that were owning homes already under control of institutional investors. The reason I bring this up is not because, you know, I mean, look, it's not the most important policy in the world to me. I just don't like when we kind of do the shortcut thing where we take this, you know, the big boogeyman and just say, okay, well, they're to blame here. Let me give you another scenario. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but like when COVID hits, like we're in this panic situation, our government's panicking, they decide to spend multiple trillions of dollars. Joe Biden gets in and makes it much, 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 much worse. And trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars more. Inflation goes through the roof. Well, what happens when all that goes on? Interest rates go through the roof. When you're talking about what is actually making your house cost more, it's much more those interest rates caused by the spending through COVID than really any of this other stuff. And we can try to solve some of these problems, but that's the problem we really need to attack. And if we can do that, and a way of doing that as well to make that even better is actually adding to the supply of homes. That would really make a difference for people, but that's not a quick fix. I think, you know, here, this is something that feels really good. Not sure it would actually make much of a difference. One of the things I've learned over time is that most systems work great right up until the moment you actually need them. And that's why Jace makes sense to me. I mean, it's not about assuming the worst. You don't know the worst is going to happen, but it's about closing the gap between when something happens and when help actually shows up. With the Jace case, you have emergency medications and prescription antibiotics already in your home where they're, I don't know, useful. Because they're not useful for sitting in some pharmacy halfway around the country. Jace Daily will let you secure up to a full year of your regular medication. So if you're taking, like, you know, heart medication or blood pressure medication or whatever it is, you don't have to constantly be watching the refill dates or hoping everything lines up on time. Get it all at once. Jace Aid offers serious medical-grade first aid kits designed for real emergencies, not just minor inconveniences. Check all their stuff out. They can get you prepared like nobody else. Jace.com. Enter the promo code STU. Get a discount on your order when you do that at checkout. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. Jase.com. The promo code is STU. Friend sent me this last night. Today only. ICE shooting. New food pyramid. $1.5 trillion defense budget. No more home purchases by corporations. No more stock buybacks for defense contractors. Seize two ships in Venezuela. Control Venezuela oil exports. Control running Venezuela, launch investigation into California corruption, create plan to buy Greenland, ask the court for $6 million in legal fees in election case, and pull out global climate agreements. That's it. One day. There's so much to talk to you about. Join us. BlazeTV.com/stew. Save $20.